Jays win a close one, a tight one. You got to love September baseball, show. This is what it's all about. You wouldn't have it any other way, I think, if you're a Blue Jays fan. We've seen it all before, how September can be when you're out of it and things are not going your way. This is exactly the type of baseball you want to be invested in. And the Blue Jays made it interesting tonight. It is never an easy ball game, it seems, for the Blue Jays when they head down south to Tropicana Field to take on the Tampa Bay Rays. But they are victorious tonight, 4-2, to even up this three-game set. As Ben mentioned, you can text us, as always, 590-590. Give us your name and your location. We'll get to those texts coming up in just a moment. But we began last night's show, Josh and I show, though, talking about the umpires. Of course, Ron Culpa having a bit of a rough ninth inning, and I think a lot of people expected Joe West to have his moments in this ball game tonight. To be honest, wasn't going to expect it once again in the ninth inning when things mattered there, but with two outs, Jordan Romano throws a first pitch slider that catches a lot of the plate. Let's just put it that way. And that really changed the at-bat there with G-Man Choi. Now, of course, you could say Jordan Romano probably shouldn't have thrown a 3-2 breaking ball there to bring the potential tying run to the plate. Maybe he should go with, I don't know, 100-mile-an-hour fastball that he was featuring there. But just like I said, just every time the Blue Jays head down to the Trop, it feels like something wacky happens, something just goes awry. They did get the win tonight, but it never seems easy.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of expecting more Rays Tropicana Field shenanigans tomorrow afternoon, but at least the Blue Jays pulled it out tonight. And you know, Rob, I know you're not the hugest fan, the biggest fan of 3-2 breaking balls, period, I would say, right? Generally speaking, and I have had this conversation before in the past. And you know what's funny? I don't hate the idea of throwing a 3-2 breaking ball, but I feel like there's a time and a place for most, for everything, there's a time and a place, right? And with two outs in the bottom of the ninth inning, and maybe if you want to add in at Tropicana Field as well, when you, like you said, if you are Jordan Romano and you have a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, you know, to be nibbling around the plate for a 3-2 breaking ball in that particular situation, I think is what probably had a lot of fans kind of slapping their foreheads a little bit.
Well, I can think of a, you know, 3-2 breaking ball that actually did work out, and it was earlier this season. You have to go way back, but Joel Piamps threw a 3-2 breaking ball to strike out Brett Phillips, I believe it was, in the Rays series back when the Blue Jays were down in Dunedin. So yeah, it's not as if you can't ever throw a 3-2 breaking ball. You know, there are times and places, but when you're up two runs, this is probably not the spot to be doing it, especially when you throw 100 miles an hour like Jordan Romano. But gets the save, wasn't the prettiest way to do it, but it's not how, it is how many for the Blue Jays this evening. And you know, we got to talk about Alek Manoah as well. Very much like Robbie Ray did in the opener, had to grind through this one. Was able to get through six innings and pick up the win tonight, but six walks. Once again, Joe West maybe squeezing him at times, but early in this ball game, it felt like his command was all over the place. Didn't really have much feel for it. Seven strikeouts, but this kind of just goes back to what we've been talking pretty much all season about since Alek Manoah came up to the big leagues. This guy is incredibly mentally strong, and nothing seems to faze him. You know, this is a middle of September game where you're life and death for the playoffs, and to have a rookie pitcher head to the Trop to face on one of the better teams, face off against one of the better teams in the American League and in all of baseball, to have this type of gutsy performance, it just keeps building up the resume for a guy like Alek Manoah that makes you wonder, you know, what can the ceiling be for this guy when he gets more experience? If he's doing that stuff now at this stage of his career, you know, what is that going to mean for him, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the line?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I think gutsy is the perfect word to describe what we saw from Alek Manoah, right? It really seemed like his command was eluding him at times throughout the entire game, really, right? He would get two quick strikeouts and then load the bases, and it just seemed like he was walking the tightrope of disaster basically all night. And like you said, he had the mental fortitude as a rookie in order to avoid falling off the tightrope. It was absolutely phenomenal stuff from Alek Manoah tonight, relatively speaking. Obviously, he didn't go out there and blow guys away consistently and do all the things you kind of expect him to do, even comparing him to the last start he had against the Rays, which I believe you and I actually did, right? When he had, I think, double-digit strikeouts or something close to that. So yeah, no, wasn't the most perfect night. Certainly a heart pounding win in basically every aspect, from Manoah to Richards to Romano as well. But Alek Manoah, the mental fortitude with him is something that is so impressive to see as a rookie. I know everyone is probably going to ask, Is Alek Manoah in contention for the AL Rookie of the Year award? And you know what? He probably is maybe what? Like maybe generously top five. But when you look at the other guys in the race, probably guys like Randy, just to get ahead of those questions, like guys like Randy Arozarena, who we saw in this ball game. And then you also got like Luis Garcia and other guys like that. I mean, he is deserving of being in the conversation, no doubt. But I just think because he didn't play the whole season is probably going to be the big obstacle there.
Yeah, it's a tough rookie class to, you know, squeeze into that top three, even the top five. You mentioned Luis Garcia, you mentioned Randy Arozarena, even Shane McClanahan, who we've seen with the Rays. I mean, there's been a lot of really, really strong rookies in the class this year. But, you know, does he deserve to be honorable mention, you know, with Rookie of the Year? Definitely does. And, you know, has just really shored up this rotation ever since he came up to the big leagues for the Blue Jays this season. Just has added such a different dynamic to that rotation and has been massive. He's won a lot of big games for this team, including tonight, where he had to grind through those six innings. But you know, definitely got the job done tonight. As I said, it's not how, it's how many. And the Blue Jays holding serve tonight, especially on an evening where the Yankees beat up on the Texas Rangers. So Texas losing to the Yankees means New York is just a half game back of the Blue Jays where they were yesterday. And the Red Sox currently leading 6-3 over the Mets in the top of the ninth inning. So if things hold right now and the Red Sox win, they'll remain a game and a half up on the Blue Jays for the top wild card spot. But the Blue Jays still sitting in that second wild card position, which exactly what you want to do. When the other teams are winning on the out-of-town scoreboard. You
Both Stroman and Brad Hand pitching in that game. Thanks a lot, Stroman and Hand. Jeez. Help us out a little.
I saw a stat. Marcus Stroman's ERA gave up, I think, four runs tonight to the Red Sox. His ERA was over three for the first time this season. So he's been pitching incredibly well.
Yeah.
And it's too bad that he wasn't able to keep that going tonight. But the Red Sox currently up 6-3 on the Mets in the top of the ninth innings. Let's talk about the Blue Jays offense in this one. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. continues to stay red hot, setting a new career high with his 21st homer of the season. This one, an absolute no doubter. It's difficult to hit homers at the Trop. It's such a pitcher's park. And this one was to the deepest part of the ballpark in left center field. And he absolutely tattooed it. He's been phenomenal, really, the last couple of months. This isn't even just a post-All-Star break thing, you know, arbitrary numbers, arbitrary end dates, of course. But, you know, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. now for several months has been hitting at an incredible clip, 2-for-4 again tonight with that homer, his 21st of the season. And we know this lineup is stacked. It's got George Springer, Marcus Semien, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez hitting 1-5. I know it's not a huge jump, but with the way that he is hitting right now and Alejandro Kirk has really started to slow down the last, you know, four or five games, I'm still a little bit surprised when I see Lourdes Gurriel Jr. batting seventh. I don't know if it's a comfort thing where the Blue Jays think, well, if it's not broken, don't break it. We'll just leave him there. I know he has batted sixth at times, you know, in certain situations where they want to bump him up into the lineup. But, you know, right now, especially when he's going the way he is and you've got guys like, you know, Bo at times has scuffled. George Springer, of course, had a hit tonight, hit a laser beam that went off the glove of Yandy Diaz. But with the way Gurriel is swinging right now and the way Alejandro Kirk is not really swinging it right now, even just bumping him up in that sixth spot in the lineup, you know, gives him an opportunity to maybe get an extra at bat in each game. I know last night he came up and had a big walk in the top of the ninth inning, the Blue Jays ultimately losing that game. But, you know, certain situations you would love to see Lourdes Gurriel Jr. up there as opposed to, you know, maybe a pinch hitting Randall Grichuk or a pinch hitting Corey Dickerson with Gurriel Jr. in the on deck circle waiting to hit. Just putting him in that sixth spot, I think, could, you know, make a difference. Maybe it's marginal, but at this time of the year, you're trying to get all the edges possible.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something I think I would be on board with at this point, right? He's seeing the ball so well in virtually every aspect of the game right now. I know Josh, who's not with us tonight, but Josh is very high on Lourdes, and you feel that it was, I remember you and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe even, heck, longer than 2 weeks ago at this point, considering how hot he has been, but that maybe he has actually figured something out, because I feel like the conversation that we have all had, Blue Jays fans, media, that we have all had about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. over basically his tenure as a Blue Jay has been that he has been largely very streaky, right? He is, yeah. And I mean, certainly all players are streaky to a certain extent, but it really felt like the splits of being super hot and super cold were with Lourdes, he'd get like ice cold, right? Like ice age level cold. And it's certainly this season, maybe he's figured it out, right? I sometimes feel like I'm a little conservative when it comes to saying, you know what, player X has changed how he plays and he is going to be this guy more often than he's the guy he was before. And I feel like I've fallen into that trap with Randall Grichuk, for example. But I do feel like based on what we have seen over the past, gosh, it's at what point is this now, Rob? Like 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks at this point? Lourdes Gurriel Jr. has been one of the more consistent hitters in the lineup. And I agree with you. It certainly seems like on the text line, people are agreeing with you as well. Mike from Kingston, I think it's time to move Lourdes up in a spot in the order, don't you think? Mike from Angus, is it crazy to consider inserting Gurriel into the leadoff spot? And I guess that kind of goes along with the conversation of Springer hitting leadoff and is he injured and is it worth maybe moving him out of that spot until he's at least a little healthier? I see a couple other ones here as well. Steve from Rails, why is Kirk hitting ahead of Gurriel, et cetera, right? So I think a lot of people see, you know, with the hot hitting Lourdes Gurriel Jr. right now, you know, he is deserving of being moved up the batting order, I would agree.
Like, I could get it if he was just teeing off on left-handed pitching and you wanted to keep that, you know, lineup, the balanced lineup with Corey Dickerson batting sixth against a righty and then Gurriel Jr. batting seventh. But he's teeing off against everyone. Yeah. He's teeing off against lefties. He's teeing off against righties. It just doesn't make sense to me. I know you want to, you know, have a little bit of balance there, you know, slotting Corey Dickerson, so maybe you don't have to go, you know, back-to-back lefty in some spots, but just with the way he's going right now, and you look, you know, back a couple of months, he had an incredible June. He had an 873 OPS. He cooled off a little bit in July, 683, but 868 OPS in August, and so far in September, coming into tonight's game, it was 1190 was the OPS. So really outside of July at certain points, he's been blistering the ball since pretty much June. So it's been a pretty hot run here for Lourdes Gurriel Jr. And maybe tonight was the night after that monster home run, his 21st of the season, the Blue Jays go, you know what, if we got to go six straight righties, it doesn't really matter. We're going to go with our six best right now. And Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is going to get a little bit of a bump up to the top half of the lineup here. And just a quick update from Fenway Park, Red Sox winning it 6-3 over the Mets. So they remain a game and a half up on the Blue Jays for that top wild card position. You mentioned George Springer, and tonight hit a ball 105 miles an hour. He's, you know, had some 95 plus, you know, batted ball events, if you want to use the StatCast term. But he really hasn't had a ball hit this hard since September the 4th, when he hit a single against the Oakland Athletics. I think it was 111 miles an hour. It's sort of matched up with the eye test where, you know, he's made some decent contact from time to time show, but really hasn't had a ton to show for it outside of that two-run homer, of course, in Baltimore that swung that doubleheader game between the Blue Jays and the Orioles. But this is, you know, kind of been on my mind, you know, even before, I should say, that homer against the Orioles, he was really scuffling, didn't seem to be, you know, having great at-bats. You know, how long could you keep going with George Springer in the leadoff spot as a guaranteed four ABs? Now, I will say, for people that didn't watch the game tonight, he rounded the bases pretty well and ran the bases pretty well on Teoscar Hernandez's RBI single there in the eighth inning to give the Blue Jays the extra insurance run. But, you know, still at this point, you look at Springer's numbers, really, since he came back from the knee injury, they're not particularly good. And before that, you know, liner that went off Yandy Diaz's glove to get Springer to reach there in the eighth, you know, he wasn't looking very good in this ball game either. So the Blue Jays obviously know how healthy he is, and Springer knows how healthy he is. There's been talk from Charlie Montoyo the last couple of days. We might even see him in the outfield in the next couple of days,
I don't believe that.
In Minnesota. Yeah. That would be wild.
I'll believe that when I see it.
I will definitely believe that when I see it. George Springer roaming the outfield at Target Field out in Minnesota. You know, maybe they just do that to get an extra a bat. But, you know, him running the bases there in the latter stages of the game, that definitely was a good sign. But, you know, where do you stand right now on George Springer and his position in the leadoff spot? We know that's where he's most comfortable. The swings from time to time look good. It just feels like they're few and far between, which I don't know if that's good enough to guarantee him four ABs every single night.
I think that's where I fall too. I really, it's nothing against him at this point, right? But with so many hot hitters, and I know that, I mean, that we've kind of switched the hot hitting conversation from Kirk to Gurriel over the last, you know, week or so. But before that, it was maybe we should take Springer out of the DH spot and let him rest for a couple games, let him bat, maybe bat him fourth or what have you, and bat Kirk in the leadoff spot at this point, so you get both Jansen and Kirk into most games, right? Maybe you just move Simeon back up there. He has been on a tear basically the entire season. Maybe you put Bo up there, right? We saw Bo putting up decent numbers in the couple of games he batted out of the leadoff spot. Honestly, at this point, I just want to see George Springer sit for a couple games, not because he's being, you're punishing the guy or anything like that. And like you said, they know how healthy he is. He knows how healthy he is. By all reports, everything to do with Springer is just him, you know, pain tolerance stuff, pain management stuff, playing through it. And like you said, he rounded the bases, looked pretty fine, all things considered. But at the same time, I just feel like when it comes to George Springer, I would rather see him just, maybe just take a break. Maybe if you're in a 3-game series, take a break for the last game. If you're in a 4-game series, maybe 2 games he gets off or something like that. Because if this team is going to make the postseason, I think they're going to need him. But again, that also to play devil's advocate for what we're talking about here. I mean, they might need his bat in the lineup in order to make the playoffs, right? And that's really the catch 22. It feels like here with George Springer. But for me personally, I think at this point, whether it's Gurriel getting put up there, whether it's Kirk, whether it's Bo or the top four being reshuffled in some manner, I think Springer needs to come down a little bit, just because I know we like to say 75% or 80% of George Springer is better than most ball players. And maybe that is the case. But right now, I think I'd rather see Bo or Simeon or Kirk or someone else up there for the next couple of games.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, it's not an easy decision. You obviously have to, you know, take in the fact that he's a guy that you're paying a ton of money to, and he's gutting it out right now, and he's obviously not 100% healthy, and you're, you know, trying to keep egos in check and make sure everybody's happy. And like we said before, we know George Springer is most happy in the leadoff spot. That's where he is most comfortable. I was just happy to see that he hit a ball hard tonight, and, you know, that gives me a little bit more confidence that, okay, maybe it's just not as bad as we think, and he's able to, you know, every once in a while run into one, hit a ball hard, because like you said, you'd still rather have his lineup in there than, say, you know, a Jake Lamb or someone of that nature. You know, I don't think we're, you know, running to get Jake Lamb's bat in there every single day. That being said, I would like to see him play against righties over a guy like Breivik Valera, but that's just me.
That's former NL All-Star Jake Lamb.
There you go, right? This is a guy that historically has hit right-handed pitching pretty well. So, you know, ultimately, George Springer, like, I don't think he's going to get moved out of the leadoff spot. I feel like it's a little bit of fantasy baseball manager that you and I are playing, which, you know, we love fantasy baseball. Yeah. It's always fun to talk about that. But I think if we're being realistic, because I'm sure a lot of people are asking about it as well on the text line, and, you know, we've been getting a lot of questions about George Springer, what do you do? Because the ABs haven't been great. The numbers haven't been great. I would be stunned, to be honest with you, if they took him out of the leadoff spot this deep into September with just, you know, a few weeks remaining in the season. All of a sudden, they're going to flip things with George Springer batting fifth and Bo Bichette moving up to the leadoff spot. Like, I can't see it. He's been hurt. This is kind of, you know, the toughest stretch that he's had since coming back from the injury. So, you know, are they going to flip the script and, you know, move someone else up there? I highly doubt it. But if he can just start making some better contact, I think that would make everyone feel a lot better about keeping him in the leadoff spot. When we continue here on Jays Talk, we will hear some post-game audio. Teoscar Hernandez, who had a big RBI single, spoke with Sportsnet's Arash Madani. We'll also get to your text. 590-590 is where you can reach us. Give us your name and your location. Blue Jays win it 4-2 over the Tampa Bay Rays. It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Show Alley on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
He's making it rain sunflower showers in the dugout. Teoscar Hernandez and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Rob Wong, Show Alley with you. Blue Jays win it 4-2 over the Rays, but it was not easy. Alek Manoah had to grind through 6 innings, walking 6, striking out 7, giving up 2 earned runs. Trevor Richards walked a pair in his inning of work, and then Jordan Romano, who came in for the save in the ninth. Got the first two outs on strikeouts and then walked three in a row to load the bases before getting Joey Wendell to fly out to right field to end it as the Blue Jays even up this three-game series. Of course, for people that didn't hear the story before the ball game show, and happened really about what, like an hour, 90 minutes before the game, but Sportsnet's Arash Madani, Shai Davidi reporting on this, that in game one of this series, for people that remember, Kevin Kiermaier looking for the Little League home run, slid into home plate, was tagged out by Alejandro Kirk, and in the midst of sliding at home plate trying to score, he knocked a card out of Alejandro Kirk's wristband. Of course, that card has a lot of proprietary information on it. For people that haven't seen the video, Kiermaier's, you know, laying down at home plate, realizes, well, there's a piece of paper here, looks at it, grabs it, takes it back to the dugout. The Blue Jays sent a bat boy to try to retrieve it, and the Rays are like, nah, we're not giving it back. Kiermaier spoke with Arash Madani earlier today and basically said, you know, it's paraphrasing, but, you know, it's September, like, I'm not going to give it back. Yeah. Didn't really even know what it was at that time. But getting an update here from Sportsnet's Arash Madani, that Tampa Bay Rays manager Kevin Cash, who spoke to his buddy Charlie Montoyo before the ball game, said he didn't even know anything about this until today, and he apologized to both Montoyo and Pete Walker for it. So okay. I guess that's the end of it. I think it was the end of it today, because we were expecting maybe Kevin Kiermaier to eat a ball in the back or something on a, you know, pitch that maybe got away from Alek Manoah.
Right.
I don't think that ever made sense. You know, the Blue Jays are trying to make the playoffs here. They can't afford to get Alek Manoah suspended, you know, put Kevin Kiermaier on base in what, like a scoreless game. Like, what's the point of that? And it seems as if, you know, Kevin Cash, Charlie Montoyo, they hashed it out prior to the game. So just kind of one of those weird things that I don't think I've ever seen in baseball personally, where you've got a player stealing a card that has a lot of proprietary information on how to, you know, get hitters out. As Ben Wagner described it, you know, during the broadcast, it was Taylor Sesedo pitching at that point.
Right.
And it was basically, you know, tailored to Taylor, if you will. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but it was Taylor Sesedo's card, and it was for him to work with Alejandro Kirk in concert to try to figure out how they were going to get those hitters out. So it's not Jordan Romano's card. It's not anybody else's card except Taylor Sesedo's. But still, you know, for Kevin Kiermaier to walk away with that piece of information, I found it interesting. I honestly didn't feel either way about it. You know, it's great. You know, you want to, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, as they say, show. But, right. You know, I thought we'd talk more about it, but really it doesn't seem like it's, you know, it's much ado about nothing in the end.
Yeah, I think too, what the most curious part about it was when the aspect of the story, at least to me, was when the aspect came out that they sent the ball boy over, right, to ask for it back, and they were like, yeah, get out of here, like, scram, kid. And all I could think of was, why didn't Charlie Montoyo just go over there? Because I'm on board with saying, ah, Charlie Montoyo needs to fight for his guys. Like, certainly managers need to do that. But at the same time, like, specifically because of the relationship between Charlie Montoyo and Kevin Cash, Montoyo was Cash's bench coach for like however many years. Right. I just thought maybe it was an in-game situation, and maybe just it got away from everyone in the moment and they didn't know until afterwards. But if they had the wherewithal to send over a ball boy, you think they would just be like, hey, okay, Montoyo should be the one going over there. And it's just, you know, what's interesting is because Eric Neander, who is the Rays GM, I think it said before the game that he also didn't know about this, right? Yeah. I think he was talking to a Shai, or he was talking to Arash as well, perhaps. But he said, he made a statement that Neander didn't know about it, Kevin Cash didn't know about it. So who did know about it? Like, who has this piece of paper right now if no one in the moment knew about it? Is that do we take what they're saying at face value? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't really matter tonight. Kevin Kiermaier drew a walk. I think it was all pretty funny, though, when he made that diving catch on Teoscar Hernandez. I know our technical op, Andrew Dutch Holland, buzzed me and said, I think he knew, scouted that pretty well. I was like, yeah, I think so. He was in the perfect spot to make that catch. It's so funny when you said, you know, they told the bat boy to scram. It reminds me of, like, Charlie Montoyo and Kevin Cash are two, like, mob bosses or something, and there's, like, a beef going on, and Charlie Montoyo sends one of his little cronies over to the Rays side of the field, and it's like, hey, kid, get me that info back. And they're like, scram, get out of here, kid. Like, no, you tell Charlie to come see me.
Yeah.
You don't send your cronies to come talk about this stuff. But at the end of the day, it doesn't seem like there's really anything going on. So we'll see what happens. I did find it interesting as well. Arash Madani mentioned in his report prior to the game that the Blue Jays, anywhere they go on the road, they bring a paper shredder with them and they shred all the, I'm not even making this up. Like Arash said it, he reported they bring a paper shredder to the ballpark on the road and they just like shred all the information that they have to make sure teams can't, dig it out of the trash or what have you.
Throwing the hard drives in the microwave, burning everything, burn after reading. Apparently, this is what the Blue Jays have to do now for the rest of the season. And certainly every time they go down to Tropicana Field, it would seem. But yeah, I don't know. I wasn't super concerned with it. I admit it did rub me the wrong way when I heard the Kiermaier audio from that Arash had collected from him. Right after the whole incident kind of unfolded and unfurled earlier tonight or earlier this evening, I suppose. But he really, like, Kevin Kiermaier really seemed to fumble around by kind of the idea of saying, well, I'm not going to give it back. I was never going to give it back. It's not my job to give it back. And he kept on kind of saying, I do apologize. I didn't mean to make anyone mad, but I'm not going to give it back. And I'm like, well, okay, well, the apology is kind of meaningless then.
Yeah, and just seeing this now that Charlie Montoyo is saying in his post game that Kevin Cash apologized to him and also Pete Walker and Ross Atkins, and Montoyo says the matter is now, quote, agua under the bridge.
Okay.
So Charlie's all good with it. Look, him and Kevin Cash go way back. They're buddies. They're going to hash it out. It's not a big deal. Teoscar Hernandez, a big deal, had a big insurance run, an RBI single in the eighth inning, helping the Blue Jays beat the Rays 4-2 after the game. He spoke with Sportsnet's Arash Madani.
Teoscar, you've been here so many times, man. It's never easy to get a win, never easy to finish off these Rays. What makes them just so difficult?
I mean, it's until they have the little breath, they're going to fight. They're going to fight for it. That's why they're in first place. But I say that's why they're in first place. I mean, they make every the little things, and that's why they win ball games. They take good at-bats. It's not going to be easy for our pitchers, and we know it's not going to be easy, but we're going to keep fighting. We're going to keep fighting and win those ball game.
Yeah, you kept fighting. Double-digit walks issued and only give up 2 runs. How did this team find a way to do it tonight?
I don't know. I think maybe after those walks, they make pretty good pitches, and that's why we get out of it. And it happens, this is part of the game. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be a lot of pressure, especially for us that we're fighting for a wild card. And that's the game. That's the baseball. That's the fun of this sport.
Bo was saying yesterday, yeah, I know we got in the playoffs last year, but it wasn't like it was packed stadiums. It wasn't like it was 162 with all the adrenaline. So many guys in this clubhouse have never been in a postseason push like this. What are you learning about what it takes to get there, to get to October, to punch the ticket the way you guys are doing it right now?
I mean, we're learning a lot. I mean, obviously, like I say, it's not easy. It's not easy because this is one of the hardest divisions. They all have pretty good teams. Everybody's healthy. That's one of the most important teams for us. That everybody's back, and we're going to keep pushing, and we're not going to look for other teams. We're going to look for our team and try to do the little things and win ball games.
You've gotten hot, and Lourdes has gotten hot at a real important time in the season. He always talks about pineapple power. I mean, how vital is it to get that kind of production at that spot in the lineup from him?
I don't know. It just... like I always say, every time that I go to the batter's box, I just try to do my job. Try to get on base, try to do damage, try to get swing good pitches and get on base for my teammates behind me. Like you say, Gurriel is starting to swing the bat really well, the way he's been swinging it for the last 3 years. And that's very important for us, and that's a good thing. I mean, we're gonna continue to do the little things and see what happens.
Look, fans are paying attention to the scoreboard and the standings and what's happening. What's it like to be part of all this, man, as a player?
I mean, as a player, we obviously want to win, and we want the other team to lose so we can keep moving forward. But it's not going to be that like that, and they they obviously have pretty good teams, and they're going to keep pushing the same way we're pushing right now.
There he is, Teoscar Hernandez, who had a big RBI single in the top of the eighth inning, helping the Blue Jays win it 4-2 over the Tampa Bay Rays. When we continue here on Jays Talk, we will get to your text. 590-590 is where you can reach us. We're brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. It's Rob Wong and Show Alley with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Go ahead, just try to run on Lourdes. The man cuts down runners like a lumberjack. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays play here on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Rob Wong, Show Alley with you here. It is Jays Talk, brought to you by your Ontario Honda dealers. Blue Jays win it 4-2 over the Tampa Bay Rays as they remain in that second wild card spot because the Yankees beat the Rangers. And the Red Sox, picking up a win over the New York Mets, remain a game and a half up on the Blue Jays for the top wild card position. Right now, though, we want to get to your text. 590-590 is where you can always reach us. Give us your name and your location. Show off to you.
So let's see. Rosalie on Avenue says, heck of a trade when the Jays got Teoscar Hernandez for Liriano. Yes, that's probably
yeah,
up there. It's, I think Nori Aoki was involved in that trade as well, Rob. So, you know, not a bad trade for the Blue Jays going back to 2015 or so. Let's see here. We got Rob, Mount Albert, Ontario. Amazing to think you can give Tampa Bay 11 walks and keep them to only two runs on the scoreboard. I see here. Also, there was a tweet from John Morosi that tonight the Blue Jays did all three of these things in the same game for the first time in franchise history, issued 11 plus walks, scored four runs or fewer, and won the game. And here's a fun fact, again from Morosi, the Blue Jays franchise record for walks issued in a victory is 13, set in a 12-11 win over Boston on April Fool's Day in 2002. Chris Carpenter was a Toronto starter that
wow.
opening day.
That's way back, if we're going way back. Every time I think of, you know, high walk games, I always just think of A.J. Burnett's no-hitter
yep,
when he
sure.
was with the Marlins. And he walked nine guys and threw a no-hitter. Like, how improbable is that? So it just goes to show you, even if you walk the world, you can still win some ball games. It will be very tough on your heart and your nerves trying to watch it all go down. But just felt like all night long at some point, you know, the Rays kept battling back every time the Blue Jays seemingly, you know, got a little bit of an edge and opened the door. The Rays were able to bust through it, as they always do, until the ninth, when Joey Wendell flew out to right field, and the Rays' magic ultimately ran out, at least for one night.
At least for one night, yeah, right, because Manoa walked six, Meza was really great, then he pitched the one inning, he walked nobody, Trevor Richards walked two, and then, of course, Romano walked three and loaded the bases. Which is a little concerning, especially for Romano, especially after he was just nails to start that inning, right? What was it? Six straight outs, I guess, or six straight strikes, pardon me, to get the two first outs of that inning and then loading the bases. I see Robbie from Georgina. Would Romano still be the closer he is today if Kirby Yates stayed healthy? And that's an interesting what if, I suppose, but I guess and I don't want to say it's a good thing that Kirby Yates didn't stay healthy,
well,
but it would certainly change the equation somewhat.
It definitely would. You know, the Blue Jays brought Kirby Yates in to be the closer, but you don't even have to go back that far. You go back to after Kirby Yates got hurt. Who was the closer at the first few weeks? It was Julian Merriweather. Julian Merriweather was the one closing out games for the Blue Jays in New York. So if Julian Merriweather doesn't get hurt, is Jordan Romano the closer? I think that's really the question.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I mean, look, we know what Merriweather is now, and it's not that he is bad necessarily, but he has certainly he just hasn't been as effective as he has been basically looking back to April, right? Like his fastball command is just velo in general is down by almost a full mile per hour, right? You know, the spin rate is down. It would seem, at least we don't know for sure, but it would certainly seem like in addition to trying to find his way back from injury, maybe he also was hit by a little bit of the sticky stuff situation.
Yeah. And we haven't seen him, of course, since that crackdown happened. And, you know, there's still moments where he's throwing 98, 99, but it doesn't seem like his stuff has the same life that it did earlier this season. And the command, the control definitely is not the same as it was at the beginning of this season. Let's grab a few more texts.
Sure. I see here one from, just grabbing the name actually, Rob from Belleville. Are you guys for nay or yay for automated strike zone calling? Personally, a nay for me, but nights like the last few have me considering it. P.S. Honest to God, I would have taken that card too.
Yes, I would have too.
I probably would have
been honest. I definitely would have taken that card. But automated strike zone, robot umps. I've been on that train, geez, I want to say for like the last 10 years. Like, yeah. I've always just felt that way for the longest time, that robot umps, we have the technology to do it. You know, we see it in tennis. We see it in, you know, soccer with the goal line technology. You know, is it perfect? Of course not. It needs some tweaking. But I know, you know, a few months ago, people sent out that video on Twitter. There was like some really bad looking strike call where a catcher just caught it above the dirt. And my response to that is, have you ever watched a Major League Baseball game? Like, we watched a pitch literally down the middle of the plate tonight get called a ball. So if you're going to show me, you know, the robot ups and say, it's not perfect, every single night, the umpires are not perfect. So what would you rather have? You know, a machine calling it, maybe it's 95, 96% accuracy and there's going to be some ugly ones? Or are you okay with, you know, what we saw last night from Ron Culpa and what we saw tonight at times from Joe West? Would you rather have that every single night?
Yeah, I just can't think that in a world where we live with replay and the minutia that is captured on cameras almost instantaneously, right? Instantly for virtually every sport. Look at the various replay reviews in soccer, which I know a lot of the robotic type stuff causes a lot of consternation across the board, but it just feels like, I think I would rather have the dispassionate ability of a system in order to, versus, let's say, guys like Joe West and other guys who kind of, I don't know, it just feels like they make it about themselves, and that just shouldn't be. That shouldn't be the case when it comes to the human element, let's say.
Well, that's the thing. Everybody always talks about the human element. The human element is the players playing the game.
Exactly.
It's, you know, I guess, sure, the umpires are part of that, but they're supposed to be calling it by the book. And, the strike zone, obviously, is this imaginary box that just sits out there. And these guys are supposed to be able to figure out, you know, if this 100-mile-an-hour fastball or this 90-mile-an-hour slider is within that imaginary box. But yeah, it's just kind of bizarre how Major League Baseball has gone about it. There doesn't seem to be any accountability for any umpires, and they're just kind of able to go out there and do whatever they want. And, you know, sure, if you're not particularly good, maybe you don't get the prime assignments come playoff time. But Joe West, just kind of ridiculous that he's still out there calling balls and strikes. He watched a slider go right down the middle of the plate tonight and was asleep. I don't know what was going on.
Yeah,
he
just had his eyes closed.
You know what? I'm good. That's not a strike. Let's just move on to the next one for Jordan Romano. But luckily for the Blue Jays, they don't get Country Joe'd tonight as they are able to get the job done, beating the Tampa Bay Rays 4-2. You have been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, powered by Jack Links and Hunger Down to the Minors and Feed Your Wild Side. The Blue Jays and Rays wrapping up this three-game series tomorrow afternoon at Tropicana Field. Ross Stripling, Luis Patino are the scheduled starters for this one. First pitch flies just after 3 p.m. Eastern on the Sportsnet Radio Network. For Ben Wagner, Andrew Holland, Kyle Norris, Sho Alley, I'm Rob Wong. Thanks for tuning in. Blue Jays win it 4-2 over the Tampa Bay Rays.